You're tuned to Focus on Campus, a weekly show which highlights faculty, staff, and students here at the University of Texas at El Paso. Good morning. I'm Louis Sines, your host for Focus on Campus. And joining us today are Drs. Kathy Stout and Jose Villalobos with the Political Science Department. And they're talking about a presentation that took place earlier this week on a book. The book is called A War That Can't Be Won, A Binational Perspective. Thank you very much for being with us here today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
Now, Kathy, you mentioned earlier about the fact that this was going to happen. You're always involved in community projects, but this is something that has plagued us, I guess, since, what, 2007 or something?
2008, maybe. Yes. Well, I'm co-editor of the book with Tony Payan and Tony Kraszewski, both of them also political science professors. And we were determined to create a new kind of edited collection, one that involved academic voices from both sides of the border, from both Mexico and the United States. And these are not necessarily all border people, but people from both countries. And so we're pretty proud of the fact that we have these binational perspectives with multiple disciplines represented, although it did present some challenges when we were editing the book because about half of the chapters were in Spanish and half of them were in English, and good translation is hard to find and also very expensive. So fortunately, Tony Payan is a genius in both English and Spanish and a couple of other languages, and so he was able to really stay true to what the Spanish writer chapter writers wanted to present, because we had all the copies in Spanish too.
Now, it's interesting because looking back at the Reagan years, that's when I guess the war on drugs started.
Well, it was actually Nixon who made the first declaration.
Yeah, exactly. That's right, with Elvis Presley. The fact that, you know, people were saying, just say no. And the title, A War That Can't Be Won, it's very catchy, and it's also – it gives you also kind of a feeling of, what are we going to do if this can't be won? What do we have to do? What do we have to say? So I'm interested. I know, as I said earlier in the week, you had a presentation, but what did these scholars, writers have to say in some of their areas? And I know that Jose wrote one of the chapters, but as you, as one of the editors, tell us kind of like what are some of the ideas or things that people said, the writers, from their perspective?
Mm-hmm. Well, they come from different perspectives. They don't all agree on what needs to be done. And that's why Dr. Payan has an introductory chapter, and he and I both wrote a closing chapter, because there are different ways to look at this, different strategies. And I suppose if there's one overwhelming lesson to be learned from all these different authors, it's that this is very, very complicated. And it's going to be hard to forge some kind of a consensus or agreement on what to do. But I think most everybody agrees that it is a war that can't be won. It's been around for about 40 years. The U.S., through international treaties and the United Nations, has pushed other countries into a similar prohibition, criminalization, militarization strategy like what we have. Yet drugs continue to come in. The demand continues to be high for drugs. And these drugs are very, very profitable. So there are ruthless organized criminals in different parts of the world and in the United States who are willing to do almost anything to make profits off of this.
I'm glad you brought that up, because money talks, and it not only talks, it screams, is what Al Capone said once. And so there's a supply that you said. And during Prohibition, people wanted it. People needed it, and it was making that law made a common criminal out of most people who were social drinkers. And I'm not saying that everybody here is a drug user, but that's what we hear all the time. The fact that, well, you know, it's America. They're our biggest customer, and so without them, we wouldn't even exist.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought up Al Capone, because during the Prohibition era from 1920 to 1933— you know, we added the amendment to the Constitution, we repealed the amendment to the Constitution, but that was the era when organized crime really, really took root in the United States, and it was all around this prohibition policy.
Now, because of the act being repealed, we're starting to see where states are legalizing marijuana, or the fact that it's being used for medicinal purposes. I'm curious, did some of the authors kind of look at that as an answer, possible answer?
Yes, there are some who look at it, although they don't always use the word legalize, they use the word regulate. Regulate, tax, in the same way that we do alcohol in this country. And those regulations can be pretty complicated because people and lawmakers are no doubt going to want to put some limitations on how the drug is marketed, how it is, what locations it's marketed in, the groups who may or may not be able to purchase these drugs, and then which types of drugs. Marijuana has often been viewed as a so-called soft drug, but the other drugs are considered hard drugs. They're very dangerous and probably addictive in a way that marijuana is not in the same way. In fact, many medical people look at marijuana and alcohol and view marijuana as really less dangerous to our bodies than alcohol is.
And, of course, who would have thought that what we're looking at now are people are using legal prescription drugs for the wrong reasons?
Yes, it's getting out of control. In fact, government agencies and the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy list that as the biggest problem right now, people abusing prescription drugs.
With us also is Dr. Jose Villalobos, as I mentioned, and Dr. Villalobos has been with us several times, and he is a great addition to UTEP, and we're glad that he's with us. And he wrote one of the chapters in this book. Jose, tell us a little bit about your chapter.
Sure. Thank you very much. So my chapter is coming from the perspective of presidential strategies on the war on drugs. And I look particularly at the George W. Bush and Barack Obama administrations, some of the paradoxes and ironies in the way these presidents have addressed drugs around this idea of federalism. And so what I mean by that is that we hear about all of these hot-button issues, and we hear about the fights in terms of partisan battles, Democrats versus Republicans. And there's some of that here. There's a lot of emotions tied to the issue of drugs and drug proliferation. There's also sometimes these institutional battles, you know, between Congress and the executive branch, that kind of a thing. What my chapter does is I look at the kind of philosophy that underlies the conservative and liberal movements, Republicans, Democrats, if you will. And we know that for the most part, Democrats or liberals, presidents who followed in the vein of FDR and others, they look to have the national government take more of a control over policymaking, policy solutions, whereas the Republicans / conservatives are more in line with having smaller government, leaving things more to the state, local level, trying to keep the federal government from getting too big. And I find this interesting because when it comes to the war on drugs, there's a bit of a paradox and irony there. You know, George W. Bush, when he was our governor and asked about the issue of drugs, he would answer as a governor, right, about states' rights, what Texas wanted to do, had to do, and he would relate it to what the national government was doing. Then he became president, and as president, in that position in the executive branch, like it does sometimes happen with a few issues, even though he's a small government, kind of leave it to the states, conservative in the vein of let's say, Reagan, on drugs, he very much used the federal government and expanded where he could to combat in the war on drugs. So there's not a hard holding on that issue. There's a little bit of leeway from this one president to use the federal government and not be against it getting bigger in that vein. And then comes Barack Obama, who is well known as sort of following FDR's footsteps, trying to use the federal government to do many things. We're hearing about the healthcare issue right now. But when it came to this issue of the war on drugs, from the beginning of his administration, even to some extent right now, he's been more open to allow states to do certain things. All these 50 states, and they're experimenting with different policies. They're trying different regulations and taxing and legalization or changing of regulation, decriminalization of medicinal marijuana, for example. Obama himself has said that he is okay to have carefully regulated medicinal marijuana. He's not some people misperceive that he's in favor of fully decriminalizing marijuana. It's one of those issues that he's involving on. It's a back and forth discussion that he's been having as part of the national debate. But he has been willing to let some of these states make some of the decisions on their own. And where he brings in the federal government is when he sees if there's a, he perceives there's any kind of misconduct or things are not going along as they should, then he can bring in some of the federal agents to investigate. But I find that this is a kind of an interesting thing because you've got these two presidents, right? Sometimes Bush was seen as somebody who's far away from trying to really minimize national governments. Obama has been sometimes painted in a very negative light for trying to use a lot of the national government resources. And so if Republicans and Democrats are not holding steady on this issue of their view, their philosophy of federalism, then maybe there's a way where they can meet in the middle. Maybe that can be one of those avenues. It's sort of implicit in my chapter that, perhaps Republicans, especially, and aside from just, those who identify as Republican, libertarians, people like Ron Paul, some members of the Tea Party, there's been some Republican governors even who are libertarian in some aspects. And they may say, there's a sense of overlap with Obama letting states have this capacity of making some decisions as long as they don't overstep their bounds, right? So that's an avenue there for agreement, and you can form a coalition, perhaps, to keep. And we're seeing it happening. So even though it's not the issue that's getting the most attention, it is showing some progress. And other Republicans who may come along in the future, there's a lot of talk about people like Chris Christie. There may be some similar type of avenues where, on an issue like healthcare, where right now the conservatives, they don't want national health care, and the Democrats are trying to figure out how to make it work, right? This is a different kind of a setting. This is more out of the box kind of an opportunity where it's not just about partisanship or even about institutional differences. It's in a question of federalism. It's an emotional issue where we can experiment across states and see what might be able to work, because ultimately we just want to improve the conditions in society, stop the deaths that are happening. And as Kathy mentioned, very carefully move forward with all of the health concerns involved. And it's a public issue that everybody wants solved. And after 40 years of being unable to solve it, I think, I feel very lucky to be a part of this project with these senior scholars. And I think if I, having talked to them, having been working with them for a few years on this issue and wanting to get more involved in the issue, I think there's some reason for optimism. And the public right now is giving some leeway for politicians to try different things to solve it.
Kathy, we have about a minute left in the program, and Jose mentioned about U.S. presidents. What about the Mexican leaders? Are there any chapters on that address it from Mexican president?
Several chapters, probably half of the book, focuses on Mexico, and many take a historical approach. Some focus on northeastern states in Mexico and present some very complicated pictures of the way that government, including state government, is threaded with organized crime, making this a serious and deep corruption issue that's going to be hard to clean up. However, many people don't realize that Mexico decriminalized in 2009 possession of small amounts of different kinds of drugs, marijuana and other kinds of drugs. So Mexico has already moved forward, as have other countries in the Americas and a number of European countries that now take more of an approach toward prevention and treatment rather than criminalization.
Now, in case people missed the presentation or want to find out more about it, where is the book available? Is there a website, or do they buy it from any of the bookstores online or our local bookstore?
Well, I think they can get almost anything on Amazon.com, but the publisher is the University of Arizona Press. They can go into the University of Arizona Press website, and they can order a copy, and it's available in both paperback and cloth editions. So the paperback edition is a very reasonable price.
Well, thank you very much for being with us here today. We've been visiting with Drs. Kathy Stout and Jose Villalobos, talking about the book, A War That Can't Be Won, A Binational Perspective. on the drug war. And this was edited by Dr. Kathy Stout, Dr. Anthony Payan, and Dr. Anthony Kruszewski. And again, that book is called The War That Can't Be Won, by National Perspectives on the War on Drugs. Thank you very much for being with us
today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Louis.
Focus on Campus is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Focus on Campus. I'm Louis Sines.